This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalrymple Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Okay, we've had a question from a number of our listeners about FRBs, or fast radio bursts, and why don't we observe them in the optical wavelengths? Well, we're lucky today. We have two researchers from the University of Manchester with us to talk about just that question. So welcome to Josh Hayes and James Stringer. Josh, do you want to give us a couple of sentences about yourself and what you're doing?
Yeah, so my name's Josh Hayes, as Tom has pointed out. I'm a master's student here at the University of Manchester, and I'm currently working on building a robotic optical telescope in the hope of finding optical counterparts to FRBs.
Excellent. James?
I'm James Stringer. I'm also an undergraduate, fourth year master's student. I'm working on the same project as Josh, so that's about it, really.
Okay, so first question, I guess, is for the majority of our listeners, they've probably heard the term fast radio bursts, or FRBs, but can you tell us, what's an FRB?
So my favourite way of describing what an FRB is effectively is a scream from space. It's a one-off signal that we detect only so far in the radio, and we don't know what's causing them. We've found 21 of them so far. One of them has repeated and seems to be different to the others. But like we say, they're of unknown origin, and people are trying to do all they can to find out more about them, which is what James and I are currently working on.
Yeah, so one of the things that sets them apart from other like similar signals is that they're really bright in the radio band. They're much brighter than any sort of similar source we can see in the radio sky, and that makes them of really good interest to us. Because they're so bright, it means that they're really easy to see, and that means we can use them as a probe for some really interesting physics, some high-energy physics, some cosmology, some other things like that. Another thing that's really interesting about them is that they've got a really high, this thing called a dispersion measure. It describes basically how the different wavelengths of the radio waves reach us, and basically we can use it to sort of determine how far away the signal is. And it looks like, from all the signals we've seen, that they all come from outside our own galaxy. And this means that there could be some really cataclysmic one-off events, such as neutron star mergers, flares on very highly magnetic neutron stars called magnetars, and other really big things like that. And these things, we don't have models for how they're like how they produce the light. And by observing these FRBs in different wavelengths, such as gamma rays or optical waves, we can sort of constrain these models and basically determine what makes them and how they're made.
Yeah, I've heard it said there are more models for what FRBs are than there are FRBs detected.
Yes. Yeah. My personal favourite is one that I'm convinced is a typo that uses the word supermassive neutron star. It's either a typo or someone attempting to get a new phrase used. I've not seen it anywhere else.
Actually, one of the leading theories is that they're from the collapse of neutron stars into black holes. Mm. As if you've got an overmassive neutron star, then the gravity is too much for the outward pressure of the neutron star to hold, so it will collapse into a black hole. And these one-off events might be what causes it.
The chances are very, very slim, however, that they are from extraterrestrials, which is a theory that often gets bandied about on the internet somewhere. So we've not been communicated with by little green men, unfortunately.
That we know of.
Yes.
Probably.
Okay. Do we know that FRBs are visible in the optical wavelength then?
The short answer is no.
The long answer is maybe.
Some of the bursts have been detected in other frequencies. So there's a survey called SWIFT that detected in 2016 a gamma ray source that we've sort of correlated with an FRB source. So that tells us that this source emitted radio waves and gamma rays, which are two opposite ends of the spectrum. So it sort of makes sense that we might be able to see something in the middle of the spectrum, in optical, and, well, hopefully we can observe it. But we don't know what it would look like, how bright it would be, what frequency it would be at, really.
This is the problem with having a huge number of models. Each model predicts a different amount of optical light, if any, being emitted. We should also say, though, that the SWIFT survey, the gamma ray object, whilst it appears to be from the same part of sky, we can't be certain that it's from the same object. So it might be that because they're from galaxies that we can't resolve down to the level of individual stars and objects, it may be that it's from two nearby objects and they're unrelated, or it may well be that they are related. The problem...
It's 3.2 sigma.
Is it 3.2 sigma? Okay, I take that all back.
3.2 sigma?
So sigma is basically a way of sort of describing the certainty of a measurement being true. So saying 3.2 sigma basically means that we're 99.9% sure that these signals are from the same source. So in astrophysics, we tend to be a bit sort of generous with our sigmas, and we take 3 sigma to mean like a good detection. So in particle, for example, they take up to 5 sigma, which is like 99.9999% certain that they're like a definite thing. And it's just basically a way of calibrating, like saying how sure we are of something. So we're pretty sure of this.
So it's saying that if we took 1,000 random measurements, one of these measurements would be...
By chance,
would say that these two objects are correlated in some way.
All right, so we hope they're visible at optical wavelengths. We've got an idea they might be, or potentially might be. So tell us what you've been doing about it.
So the main issue when it comes to observing any form of transient, so that a transient is an astrophysical object that changes over time. When you're observing something that is very, very short, so 5 milliseconds for an FRB, say, you can't have a detection triggering an alert to another telescope that then goes, oh, I'll have a look at that. Because by the time you've actually got round to it and started observing, the chances are the thing has gone. So what we are working on is we're building a secondary telescope to the Lovell telescope at Jodrell Bank. It's called Lovell Cam, and it's an optical telescope that will, once it's finished, spend its time basically mirroring the or shadowing the observations of Lovell. So where Lovell looks, Lovell Cam also looks. And if we find that Lovell has detected an FRB at some point, we can go back through the data and the observations of Lovell Cam and hopefully discover a counterpart to such a detection.
So our project was inspired by similar projects, such as UltraCam, which is used to look for various signals across the sky in a similar fashion. Other ones like MIR-LICT, which is going to be used with the MIR-CAT precursor to the SKA, the Square Kilometre Array Telescope in South Africa. So these are basically optical mini observatories, like on the same site as a big radio observatory. And they're doing what Josh said. So we're looking at the same patch of sky as our Lovell telescope, the big 76-metre telescope at Jodrell Bank, and basically looking at it during the night, at least. So looking at it all night to basically correlate what we see with what they see. So if they see a source, like a FRB candidate, at, say, 1 o'clock in the morning, we can go back through our data to 1 o'clock in the morning and see if we've seen anything in that same patch of sky at the same time. And then if we do see something, then potentially it might be a optical counterpart.
What we should say, though, is that MIR-LICT is probably the closest analogue to Lovell Cam. However, it's been designed specifically to target transients that last longer than 1 second. So whilst there is a potential for it to capture FRB counterparts, it's not been designed with that in mind. And so the sort of image timing that it uses means that there's actually quite a slim chance of it capturing such a counterpart.
You must be taking pictures very quickly if you're looking at 5 milliseconds.
So we want to be taking pictures very quickly, but we can't. So our current telescope hardware isn't quite capable enough to do that sort of quick turnover of images. Because we're using quite a basic camera, there's sort of some hardware issues. I mean, we can only take an image every, let's say 10 seconds or so. And so if we had a bigger budget, then we could basically buy some specialist like hardware that means we can take these images as soon as the last one was done.
Lovell Cam is currently in a proof-of-concept stage, so we are currently constructing the basic framework for such a thing to be created. And once that is complete, we are confident that the university and Jodrell Bank will acquiesce to our demands and allow us to purchase some more high-end equipment, as currently what we're using is basically bits that were found around Jodrell Bank. But they're still pretty high quality. We are also investigating how well we can observe other types of transients. So longer lasting ones such as binary star systems where you can see one star going in front of the other. We're investigating how LevelCam will respond to other transients. There are thoughts on whether or not we would be able to detect exoplanet transits in a similar method used by the Kepler telescope and soon to be the TESS, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite. We will be able to also investigate things called Cepheid variables, which are a type of variable star where we can use measurements of their periodicity to determine a distance to them. So we use them to help measure cosmological distances to nearby galaxies or just to nearby star clusters.
From what you've described, this is a fairly mechanical process. If somebody says, oh, the Lovell's seen an FRB, then you have to go back over the images for the past day or week or however long you install them for.
So it does sound mechanical, but in reality it will be automated. So, like, if there's a detection at Lovell, then that would be, like, processed by the computers there, the processors there, and that sort of would set a flag off, and that would tell our software that operates our telescope that the time and the position of the potential source. And then, so we'd be working on some sort of software to detect from an image we've taken if there'll be an FRB in there. So we could do this a really easy way by sort of comparing it to the images taken just before and just after it. There won't be that FRB in those two images because it's such a short burst, and that'd be a sort of fairly good idea of if it is there. And then once you sort of narrow down our choice or options, basically there might well be some sort of component of human interaction with this, so we'd actually go through ourselves and have a look at them and compare. That looks like it's in the same place, it's the same sort of rough brightness, same time. It's not quite as manual as it all sounds. A lot of this is done automated behind the scenes by the software of both Lovell Telescope and Lovell Cam itself. And this is the case with most observatories, actually. Most of the processing is done by computer programs rather than people. I mean, the end result is obviously done by people, but, like, these telescopes get hours and hours and hours of data, sometimes even days of data, that you couldn't go through by hand, really. And we're sort of using the same ideas as that for ours.
Okay. Oh, that sounds good. You mentioned the telescope. What kind of telescope are you using?
Well, we are using an 11-inch reflecting telescope. It's all right for what we're hoping to achieve. However, ideally, we want to be using as large a telescope as possible. Part of what LevelCam is trying to achieve are observations on a very low budget. There are obviously budget issues at the moment for everyone. And so if we can achieve successful science in this area with relatively little money compared to what is, say, being pumped into the SKA, then we will be able to replicate this as a system at other places. So one of the main issues we have at the moment is the fact that we're trying to build this in Cheshire, which is both quite light polluted and incredibly cloudy, which means that any observations you're trying to do in the optical bands are quite difficult. However, the idea of shadowing observations of another telescope doesn't mean that you have to be at the same location as it. So obviously Lovell is a radio telescope, and radio telescopes aren't really bothered by clouds. So Jodrell Bank is primarily a radio telescope. We could theoretically move Lovell Cam to somewhere in the world that was generally clearer at night and with less light pollution. We can still observe the same parts of sky, or a lot of the same parts of sky as Lovell, which would mean that we would be in a position to actually start making more regular observations most days of the year, or nights of the year, I suppose I should say.
So our telescope is just an off-the-shelf, commercially available telescope. It's not like a specialist-built piece of equipment. It is
everything, buy it on Amazon if you everything we are using is commercially available. The telescope setup we have costs less than £4,000.
It's a bit more than your sort of standard telescope, yeah. But it's no million-dollar project.
No, I mean, it's well within the grasp of most amateur astronomers. Mm. I mean, I know quite a few people that start small and quickly build up to that scale of instrument, that scale of spend on their equipment. So it is perfectly possible.
Definitely, yeah.
To do good cutting-edge science.
I mean, the telescope we are using doesn't even actually belong to Jodrell Bank. It's a telescope that was kindly donated to us by Professor Tim O'Brien, who is the director at Jodrell, or was. I actually don't know.
I'm not sure myself. It does change.
Yes. Whichever hat Tim is currently wearing, at the time he was director.
Yeah, if you're a keen amateur astronomer and you want some, on a project for about 2.5 years, then yeah, make your own Lovell cam DIY.
Or alternatively, there is a potential that once Lovell cam is complete, we could put our software out as an open source thing and try and sort of crowdsource some observations of from people who, say, aren't using their telescopes all the time.
That's an interesting concept.
So if there was someone on the other side of the world, so when it's day here, it'd be night there, they could look at the same place Lovell's looking at, and we could get nearly 24-hour observations to match with Lovell, and that'd be double our chances of seeing FRB.
We're also currently implementing the functionality to not just shadow Lovell's observations. So, like, at the moment, we can shadow the observations of any radio telescope on the eMerlin network, so that's 9 telescopes across the UK. But we could also shadow the observations of ARTHUR and VLBI networks. So these are large interferometers that are continent or even half the world size once you start including Chinese telescopes in the VLBI. That is something that we're hoping will allow us to really start getting some useful data. And once we start getting up to that size, that scale, a network of telescopes is something, a network of cheap telescopes that are still capable of making the observations and detections that we require would be ideal.
Sounds like another research project in the offing. Certainly a development program in there.
Definitely.
Hopefully.
Okay, just to come back, have you got exams? Are you, do you have to pass an exam at this or submit reports at the end of the year?
Yeah, so we're currently writing up our reports on this. Nice, tasty 30-page report.
Excellent.
We'll be presenting the current status of Lovell Cam and where we're at to the JVCA. We're actually presenting to the group out at Jodrell Bank tomorrow. I don't know if I've told you about this yet, but we are.
I know this. tomorrow being the 10th of May.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes. Of course, yes. And, I mean, alongside this, we've got a few other exams. After this is my last year on the Lovell Cam project directly. I'm going off to, well, I'm staying at Manchester, but I will be working to help detect exoplanets and analyse their composition, in the hope of working out what on earth a lot of things are made out of.
And I'm moving to the Pulsar group here at Manchester. So I'm going to be working to search for and study extreme neutron star systems called Black Widows and Redbacks. This is where you have a neutron star and a similar size star to our sun in a very close binary orbit. And we're going to use those to study very high energy physics, very fundamental physics. And that's my PhD project.
Excellent. So, welcome to the Pulsar group.
Yes.
The area I study in. A fellow inmate.
Yes. I, on the other hand, am leaving the Pulsar group. So.
Some people do escape.
Yes.
Okay. I guess this would be a very different interview if we'd actually detected an FRB. Yeah. And we got an optical observation. Any ideas, potentially, how long it could take?
So, the current status of Lovell Cam means we have an issue with the true automation of it. So for it to become fully capable of just sort of waking up when it's night, doing some observations and putting itself away, we have issues with the dome that the telescope is currently housed in. If we can sort that and get a new shed for it, effectively, I would say that with some dedicated work, Lovell Cam could be up and operational in about a year, maybe a year and a half.
Even when it is operational, though, the time between it first light and it actually detecting an FRB might be quite a while. So it's estimated that there are 10,000 FRBs from anywhere in the sky in one day, but over the last 11 years, we've only detected 18. What would you say, 21? I think it's 18.
21. Oh, it's the FRB cat has 18. No, it's got 21.
They've got 21 now. Well,
I checked this morning.
I'll do my report then. So, over the last 10 or so years, they've actually only detected 21 FRBs, as Josh said. That's less than 3 a year. So,
I mean, the first one was detected in 2007 by Lorimer. I can't remember where it was, though. Was it Parkes, I think?
Yes, it's all data from
Parkes. Most of these are from data from the Parkes telescope or the Arecibo telescope, and both of those aren't committed as much to VLBI work or E-Merlin work as Lovell is. So,
however, we do have people here at Jodrell Bank working specifically on FRB detection. So Charlie Walker, who I believe is one of your presenters, works in that area.
Co-executive producer of the Jodcast. Well, a very busy man.
Yes, it's a very long title.
Yep.
There are people working alongside Charlie who are building pipelines to automate and flag up these detections, which should hopefully make our life on Lovell Camp easier.
But I guess the answer is then we still don't really know.
Yes. The answer to a lot of questions about FRBs is we just don't know.
Okay, and on that note, then we'll close.
Fantastic.
Josh, James, thank you very much. Thanks for your time today.